Okay, this is a short subject, so it kind of fit in good for today. But I think it's an important one. Well, the four species, Leviticus 23:40, something that you'll see a lot of Orthodox Jews do, but you don't see a lot of people that keep the holy days really doing. And, you know, what's going on here and what's God saying? Because I put the verse up there. It's right there smack dab in the middle of Leviticus 23, and a lot of people read that, especially whenever a holy day comes up. And what was God thinking here? So nothing, to start out, nothing I'm going to present today is salvation, and anybody's has to do with your salvation, and anybody's free to disagree. It's just that he says do it, so if you don't, at least you should ask yourself why. God gives us a strange commandment in Leviticus 23:40, and he tells us to celebrate using the fruit of trees, palm branches, boughs of leafy trees, and willow branches. And let me get my mouse so I can... get to the slide so everybody can see. I'm going to read the verse. Leviticus 23:40. It says, "And you shall take for yourselves on the first day the fruit of beautiful trees, branches of palm trees, the boughs of leafy trees, and the willows of the brook. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God for 7 days. And you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord for 7 days in the year. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. You shall celebrate it in the seventh month." So, I'll order a set and get them here so that they're here and anybody can and have access to them. I'll leave them up front. But what's he talking about here? What does these four different species of his creation have to do? And strange enough, they're all kind of different. In fact, they all are, in a way, very different, just like all of you and all of us. What's that got to do with rejoicing and celebrating the Feast of Tabernacles? And why does he tell us to have this to worship him for the Feast of Tabernacles? I mean, what are you supposed to do with it? Now, different people got different ideas. You can look really holy. And, well, I'm not going to do that. It might come across as mocking. I was going to say, you can go down to the Wailing Wall in Israel, and you can hold this, and you can be doing your bobbing and praying and all of that. And people say, oh, there's a really religious Jew or whatever, and then the Arabs will throw rocks at you. But why does he say do it? And what are you supposed to do with him? And what's the purpose of it? What are you supposed to represent? When it comes to the subject of sacrifices, let me try and tie this in. A lot of people think, well, I'm not going to look at too much information on the sacrifices, because we know that Jesus was our sacrifice for sin, and we don't sacrifice animals and different things anymore, so it doesn't really matter. So I'm not even going to look into that area. Well, have you ever asked yourself the question, why did God command people to sacrifice animals? You say, well, we don't have to worry about that anymore. Well, I've talked to several people that don't keep the Sabbath, and they throw sacrifices, Sabbath, all that lumped in together. And if you ask them, everybody in Knoxville is tired of hearing this, but if you ask them, why don't you, talk to them in their own language, why don't you deserve to go to hell and burn? Well, if you're talking to a Christian, they'll say, well, because Jesus died for my sins. You say, oh, so let me understand this. So the law that requires sacrifice or blood for sin is still in effect today, because you're pointing to what he did for you so that you don't fry. That's one. But when you get into that, why would he choose? That's all the animals are his. And there's more sacrifices than just animals, but that's the big one. Did he just like to have like a slaughterhouse atmosphere? Because there was a lot of blood and there was a lot of killing and there was a lot of sacrifices going on. In fact, if you look in the morning and the evening prayer, he opened worship with a sacrifice and he closed worship with a sacrifice. Maybe, just maybe, there was something that the people were supposed to learn from the sacrifices. The whole purpose of it wasn't, you know, okay, if you do this, here's your penalty, pay up. The whole purpose was that they were supposed to learn something, to realize something from having to go through this, from taking the very best and laying your hands on the head of that animal while its throat was cut and watching the blood come out, and then it falls asleep and lays down and dies. Maybe it was more than just slinging blood, in other words. So maybe there's more to this than just grabbing this four different pieces from the plant kingdom, putting them together, and worshiping God. Maybe there's something we're supposed to learn. Now this part of it gets into the hypothetical, because it doesn't explain why we're supposed to do it. It just says to do it. But I learned a long time ago, when I used to, and one of the first things we did when it came to the law is we started a 613, or different ways, however you count them, but the more commonly accepted is 613 commandments, positive and negative, things you're supposed to do, things you're not supposed to do. Well, in Sabbath school at church, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago, we just started, we take like 10, 15 at a time, and we just read through them. And the idea was, before we did Torah readings and stuff, the idea was, well, eventually we'll get through them all. We'll read through them, and sometimes we'd read four or five, and all of a sudden here's one that sticks out. We'd stop, we'd talk about it, and learn a little bit. But there were some laws when we started doing that. Now, I know I had read it before, because I'd read through the Bible, but I didn't see it before. Every time you pick your Bible up, you see something that wasn't there. Well, it was actually there, you just skipped over it. And I thought, there was some laws that I disagreed with. You know, in my infinite wisdom, I couldn't figure out why God would do something that, you know, that certainly couldn't apply today, because it doesn't make any sense. Why would he say to do this? And I didn't do them. I even asked him, I said, you're going to have to show me why I'm supposed to do this if you expect me to do this. And guess what? He didn't show me nothing. He didn't show me squat. Now, what an attitude like that. One of your kids comes up, you tell one of your kids to do something, and they say, I don't feel like it. What kind of reaction are they going to get from you? No. They're going to challenge you that they know better than you, and they just ain't going to do it because it doesn't make sense. It wasn't until I started changing my heart, started doing the things that's possible to do, because there are some things that first, you know, there's laws for the Levites. I'm not a Levite, so that doesn't apply to me, right? Well, wait a minute, we're supposed to be kings and priests in the kingdom. Maybe there's something from those laws that we're supposed to learn to understand God, but without getting into all of that, I started doing everything that was possible for me to do that wasn't against the law. Like, say, for example, sacrifices. Long time ago at the Feast of Tabernacles, when we were going to read from the law in the seventh year, there was a rumor going around that we were going to sacrifice animals down there. This is, oh, crazy. Who would come up with something that stupid? Because that would actually be a violation of the law, because it's very specific who can sacrifice them and where you're supposed to sacrifice them, and you just don't go and, you know, go out to some farm and buy a goat and slit its throat and make a little fire and, you know, at Laguna Beach, that's where we were, and sacrifice. But everything that was possible, I tried to do. But what changed is I said, hey, God, you see this? I really don't understand why you said to do this. But I'm doing it because I love you. Will you please help me understand why you said we were supposed to do it? so that I can understand you more. Guess what? He started answering questions. One of them, give you just an example, one of them was the clothing laws. I thought, that's really stupid. What do you mean I can't have 80% cotton and 20% polyester? That's a mixed fiber. That's stupid. What difference does it make? Go out and try and find pure fiber clothes. Men can find 100% cotton jeans. Women, good luck. You have to order them. I mean, I said, well, he said do it, so I'll start doing it. I couldn't figure out why. And then after 3 months, 4 months, 5 months in, all of a sudden, bingo, I got the answer from a source I never even expected. It had to do with medical things and what it does to your body physically. But back to this, why? I see something like that and I say, why? Well, this is a hypothetical. This is, you know, from a commentary out of Leviticus. And I can't find anything that makes more sense. If you can figure something out, tell me. And, you know, we'll start teaching different. But this is one of the questions I got to ask when he returns. Because guess what? When he what's the first universal law that everybody is going to keep when he returns? What's it say? I'll give you a hint. Zechariah. What's it say? Everybody is going to come and observe the Feast of Tabernacles. So if everybody is going to come and observe the Feast of Tabernacles, and it says that you're supposed to have this to observe it, maybe that's when we'll finally get the truth, but I'm doing everything I can between now and then. You know, there's a lot of things we're going to get straightened out on, but that's one of my questions. Why? Do we have it figured out? So I'm going to try and help you. What might make sense? The etrog, citrus fruit. It's a citrus fruit. It has both taste. Like I said, it's a citrus. You cut it open. We always cut it open towards the end of the at the end of the feast on the eighth day or something. You can make a drink from it. You can eat it. There's lots of things you can do. It has taste and a fragrance. Okay, so what? Well, when you cut it open, you smell it. And when you eat it or make a drink, you can taste it. What's that got to do? Well, have you ever thought maybe that there are people that are believers, people that love God and want a relationship with Him? Some have both learning and good deeds. They actually try and learn and absorb and learn more about God and what He wants for them. And they actually do something with the knowledge that He gives them. Okay? That might be one. There's another. The palm. That's this part here. It's got taste. Not this part, but the fruit that comes from the palm. The date. A lot of people like eating dates. So there you've got taste. But there's no fragrance. Well, some believers, some people, some of God's children have knowledge, but they don't do anything with it. They lack the good deeds. So now we see a little bit of a mixture. What comes next? The myrtle. Myrtle here. It has fragrance. You can smell it, but it really doesn't have any taste. It's sort of like eating grass, you know. There's not a whole lot there, but it does have a fragrant smell. Some believers out there do good deeds. They actually do things, but learning and knowledge and absorbing and understanding, that's not their area that really excites them or gets them going. All right, one more, the willow. No fragrance, no taste. Some believers still lump them in there. They're there, they want a relationship. They're trying, you know, that's what they want. They want to be part of the covenant. But really, they don't have knowledge. very little knowledge and very little or no good deeds. So what? Here we got four different examples. Out of all of his plant kingdom, he chooses four different things that we're supposed to put together and use that to worship him. So here's a little bit of a visual. At the Feast of Tabernacle, we bind all of these species together, and he commands us that we're supposed to worship him with him. Well, what's he doing with all of his people? I give you two messages on why a tabernacle first, and then why did he tell us to keep the Feast of Tabernacles? And if we bind these four species together as a whole, there's something much greater than separately. Even the etrog, which has flavor, a taste, and a fragrance, just by itself, if that's all you had, it's going to kind of wither. It's going to dry up. Usually by the eighth day, it's kind of dry. You let an orange or something sit out several days, and it loses the fragrance. It loses the taste. It just withers away. Then you've got all of these other, which are lacking in some way. Some are stronger in some areas than others. But if you put them together and the purpose is to go and worship God, and it represents all of the differences amongst his people, where individually they're not complete. Individually, he gives us all different gifts and blessings and abilities and understandings. But alone, where we can small by ourselves, but if we put it together, we can become something that's beautiful and strong and something that's dedicated to worshiping God. And I personally think, and I can be wrong because it doesn't explain it, but that's why he tells us to do it. But the bottom line is he says to do it. So every year when you're doing it, the first thing I think about is, oh man, these suckers are kind of expensive, and do we really need it? Nobody really gets that excited about it or really cares that much. And say, well, he says do it, so let's do it. So, Father, please explain to us why you say something. Take this strange custom that doesn't make any sense on the face of it, but somehow, because you said to do it, I know that there's something beautiful is attached to it, and there's something that you want us to see, because that's the way he does things. He hides it in plain sight, right in front of our face. But I hope, if nothing else, I've inspired everybody here to at least look into it for themselves and to ask the question, why? Because we're all supposed to become like little children. You know, we're afraid to really sing and dance and, you know, get out and rejoice. We all know that, you know, as David danced in Jehovah's sight, we've sang that song probably. We know what David did, and his wife thought, well, you've made a fine fool of yourself. And everybody else with worldwide connections are afraid that the Pentecostalism is going to rub off on you. And then there's people that think, well, we don't want to come to your feast because we want to do some dancing and stuff, and you don't allow it. You know, I can't sing and I can't dance. That's not one of the gifts he's given me. But I like it. I like to see it, but yet people don't come because they, you know. Now, I think if that's all you do, you're kind of missing a whole lot. And singing used to be one of my not-so-favorite things. One year, one Sabbath, we got there and we were distracted and went through, gave a sermon, had everything. We were done packing up, putting everything. It was when we used to rent a conference room in a motel back in the 80s, and very few of you even know her because she's been dead for a long time, but Ida May, she came up to me and she said, why didn't we have song service? And I knew that we were, you know, by the time I thought about it, I thought, oh, it's not important, and I didn't like it, so I just kind of skipped it. And I thought, well, we got through it, nobody said nothing, let's just forget about it. And then she got on me as we're packing up and getting ready to leave. And she says, well, you got up there and you did your thing. And yeah, we listened and all that. She says, but song service is the one part of worshiping God where everybody can participate. It doesn't say make a beautiful symphony before the Lord. It says make a joyful noise. Doesn't matter if you sing off key. Doesn't matter if you know the word. If your heart is into it. And it kind of hit me. And I said, yeah, you know what? She's right. She's right. It's the one part where everybody has a chance. And I saw one of the kids up here dancing. Yesterday, there was a bunch of them. But one of the kids is up here dancing, rejoicing. And that's a lesson for all of us. What God wants. Now, yes, you don't have to get up here and spin around, and but we should all participate. And even if you don't like it, like I didn't like it, over time I came to understand and I realized how important it was to God. 1 year I had an old dot matrix printer. Everybody remembers those, and the paper would roll out on a continuous sheet. I took and I printed off every verse in the Bible that talks about singing, rejoicing in song, anything that has anything to do with music, and I printed it off. And then I printed off every verse that has something to do about the Sabbath, and just laid them out on the floor across the room. And it was a shocking thing for a lot of people. Because we came back, there was a revolt I talked about in 2000 about the music. And it's the year I did that. But this isn't about singing and stuff today. This is about this and say, why? Our kids, when you tell them something, what do they always say if they don't? Why? How come? They're naturally inquisitive and they want to know. Why, Father? Why, Daddy? Why? Not just this, but so many other things. Is it so important to him that he says, this is what I want you to do, this is what I want you never to do? Why? If we can figure out the whys, it gives us more insight into the who. Thank you.